Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box of the BangTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Monday, August 5th. I am your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200, is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Monday, Thursday format here with the Bettors Box. As you know, it is Monday. Do have some Monday mailbag questions for you at Skating Tripods on Twitter or Adam at bangthebook.com via email if you're interested in sending over your questions for that, or if you want to get on the mailing list where I send out my show notes every Monday and Thursday here, Adam at bangthebook.com via email, the way to do that. My MLB picks and tips piece updated for today. We've done a lot of stuff here on Bang the Book Radio of late. We've had Rolf Michaels, Brad Powers, Brian Leonard, Ross Tucker, all talking college football or the NFL with us. Those shows have plenty of shelf life here as we look ahead to the start of the upcoming season. So if you've missed anything here on Bang the Book Radio, maybe you've been traveling with family, maybe you've been just too busy here over the summer, those shows still with a lot of shelf life over on our podcast page at bangthebook.com. Or, of course, if you subscribe to any of the places where you can hear us, iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, we're also on that, Deezer, we're all over the place here with Bang the Book Radio. So wherever it is that you listen, you're going to find the shows and you're going to find those football shows that we've been doing here of late. So please make sure you check that out. As far as this week goes, I don't really have any football guests lined up as of yet. We'll see what happens. I'll probably take either Tuesday or Wednesday off from the show, try to get a football guest on one of those 2 days. Bettors Box again on Thursday, UFC with Christian Pina on Friday. But we got plenty of stuff going on over at bangthebook.com right now as well. Of course, our college football season win total previews, divisions for the Power Five, conferences for the Group of Five, all posted over there at the website. Lockie Lockerson back for us here to do some NFL stuff. In the lead-up to the season, he's going to have some things on Coach of the Year, Offensive and Defensive Rookie of the Year, and also MVP, so you can keep an eye out for that over at the website. A great look by Aram Toledjian at his overrated college football teams for the upcoming season. We've got preseason game previews. I'm going to have my top five college football win total picks coming out here soon, and also very excited later on today to post the start of a new series with Danny Vorgs. Danny Vorgs does our NFL power ratings for us over at bangthebook.com. Very successful over the last 2 years. He's got a series for us, breaking it down division by division, looking at the season win total numbers versus what his model suggests for the 2019 NFL year. So we'll post the NFC East later on today, the NFC North tomorrow, South on Wednesday, West on Thursday, and so on here as we do those pieces from Danny Vorgs. Over the next 8 days, he's been sending them over to me. I've had a chance to look at them. They're outstanding. You're going to love them. I know it. So good stuff coming your way at bangthebook.com here this week as well. All right, so as we fire up this edition of the Bettors Box, we'll start with the Monday mailbag, then go beyond the box score, down the lines to recap some line moves from the weekend, couple of picks for you for tonight, then finally, a preview of the week ahead. So we start with a question from Fred via email here for the Monday mailbag. It says, looking for your opinions regarding the following scenario from the perspectives of the bettor and the handicapping industry and the sports books. So what we have here is that Fred had a position on Tampa Bay at even money plus 100 on the money line. After five innings, the Rays are leading 4-3. But as he's looking at the live betting situation, Boston is plus 160 to come back and win the game. So you've got an even money bet to start the game. You've got a chance to take Boston at plus 160 after the fifth inning when they're trailing 4-3. So the situation here is this. If Tampa wins, it's a push. If Boston comes back and wins, it's $60. Now, of course, the problem being that, you know, once you make that bet on Boston, you're taking away any possible chance of getting a profit from Tampa Bay. So sort of looking here, is there positive upside? Is this the right move from a math standpoint? Was that the right call? So a lot of different factors here coming into play. So Let's first start with this. To me, I don't really I can't say if it's the proper mathematical move or not, because there are so many external factors when you start talking about live betting. You know, in this particular situation, you know, Tampa Bay's bullpen had been used extensively over the last couple of weeks. It's something that I had talked about a lot in my article, something I had talked about here on the shows as well. So do you like Boston at plus money here with that Tampa Bay bullpen and the Red Sox trailing by a run? Maybe, but plus 160 implies about 38.5%. It's 38.46% that the Red Sox can come back and win. Do you give the Red Sox, you know, about a 40% chance of coming back and winning that game? If you don't, there's no equity on that bet for you, because the line suggests that it's a 38.46% probability. You want a little bit of an overlay on that number. Do you give the Red Sox a 40% chance of coming back with their bullpen in a game that they're already trailing? I don't know. That's something you have to weigh the risk reward of. There is no blanket statement about when to make these live betting plays, stuff like that. Now, of course, if you're somebody out there who's very capitalized and you can play arbitrage, play back and forth with plus money on both sides, and do so with a high enough volume and a high enough bet size that you're going to scalp money playing both sides of this game at plus money, then sure, that makes a whole lot of sense. But in this particular situation, it's hard for me to say. I don't know your bankroll situation. I don't know exactly what the Rays and the Red Sox bullpens looked like from a rest standpoint. I don't know if the top of the order was coming up for Boston. I don't know if it was the bottom of the order. It's really hard to say. You know, the power is in your hands at that point in time. Then the question becomes, you know, do I bet on plus 160 the same thing I have on Tampa Bay for the game, where the worst case scenario is a push, the best case scenario is I make some money? Maybe. But also, do you want to cost yourself that bet where you have the lead after five innings on the Tampa Bay money line, where they're expected to win that game? You know, even with how bad bullpens have been this season, teams with a lead after five innings are still winning 84.4% of the time. Now, that doesn't take into context, you know, if they blew the lead and then got it back or something like that. It's simply to say that teams that lead after five innings win 84.4% of the time this year. So do you want to go out there and take plus 160, which implies a 38% probability that Boston comes back and wins, when realistically this season it's about 15.5% that teams come back and win? Now, you obviously don't want to factor it in just based on that. It's a lot more complex than that. You know, the Royals and the Tigers and the Orioles and teams like that probably aren't winning too many games if they trail after five. Better teams have a better chance. But still, you know, I think that when you're in a situation like this and you've got a team that has a lead after five innings, unless you are scalping it and you do have plus money on both sides to where you get profit no matter what, I'm not cutting into it because I already have the lead. And not only that, you know, that team's coming back up to the plate again now with a chance to add on to the lead. If I'm going to make a bet, and obviously this is going to change what the odds look like, I'm not making that bet when the team I'm betting against is coming up to the plate. So that's a factor that you want to consider as well. You know, Tampa Bay could very well add on. If they add on and make it 5-3, your live betting price maybe goes up to plus 300 or something like that. And you took plus 160 when that team wasn't even coming to the plate. So those are all factors that you want to keep in mind as well, that, you know, you want to look at game flow. You want to look at how many more opportunities there are for both teams. So it's hard to say. You know, I think in this instance, I do believe that this particular bet was a little bit misguided, simply because of some of the factors that were in play here, you know, with the Red Sox bullpen, with, you know, essentially both teams batting four times and the Rays already having a lead. You know, both teams hitting in the sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth. Obviously, Boston doesn't hit the ninth if they have the lead and come back and get the victory, but that's a bet I'd probably look to make when Boston's coming up, and I know it's 4-3, and they bat four more times versus the team batting three more times. And that does have an impact on the price that's out there. So it's a bankroll management question. It's a question about, you know, do you want to hedge and protect your raise bet? If it's a larger than normal bet for you, Maybe you do want to protect it a little bit. If it's a standard bet, do you really want to protect it? Because there's a reason that you bet that game. So I think a lot of people can get in serious trouble when it comes to live betting. And, you know, not to poke light at you or exploit you at all here, Fred, since you sent over the question, but simply to say that I think overall people see these plus money prices. They see all these different betting options that are out there, and it's nice to get action. It's nice to try and, you know, maximize your profits. You know, how many people are running good at blackjack all of a sudden start increasing their bet size, not really realizing that they've run really good because a lot of face cards have come out. Now they're at a disadvantage, but they're still going to up their bet size because they want to ride that wave, or they want to, you know, try and maximize those profits that they've made, not realizing the deck is no longer in your favor. So that's something that live betting can kind of become for a lot of people. And look, if you're capitalized and you're able to watch these games closely and follow a lot of games, or maybe even be part of a group that's put in some capital there, yes, there are live arbitrage opportunities. Yes, there are middle opportunities. I think if played appropriately, they can be very profitable for you. But I think that live betting is the next great frontier because it's so hard to do. Not only do you have to be there to get the right prices, have the right market entry, do all of this in the span of, what, 2.5 minutes between innings? You know, realize who's available, who's not, know your handicap, know what you want to do, so on and so forth. You don't have a lot of time for that. You know, you have all day for a full game bet. You have all week for a football bet. You've got 2 minutes or a minute and a half when it comes to these live betting situations. So, yeah, I think there's opportunity to be had there, but I think there also has to be an understanding of how difficult it is to capitalize on those opportunities. Now, to the question of are the books concerned about this and or their live betting derivatives, look, I'm sure to a degree they are, you know, because there are people that can exploit this. But also, if they were that concerned, they'd have more live traders. And a lot of sports books just have algorithms putting all this stuff together, maybe a couple of people overseeing the live action, letting a lot of it just come down to what the computer programs are saying. You know, how many times do we see in college basketball, the star guard picks up his third foul and the line doesn't adjust to factor that in because it's just algorithmic based. It's just score, time left, you know, things of that sort, you know, relative to the full game line, stuff like that. You know, we don't see manipulation of those live odds based on some of the context of the game, you know, foul trouble, or maybe the starter got hurt in the second inning or something like that. You know, we don't see a lot of that. So if books were really concerned, they'd have more live traders. But like I just mentioned, you've got short windows and you've got lower limits with these live betting opportunities. It's harder to get large sums of money down. You know, and a lot of times you've got people trading back and forth on the game to where they're going to make small profits, but they're going to lose a lot of the bets that they've made as well. So I think books aren't as concerned right now. But again, I mean, there are people that develop computer programs and stuff like that. So, you know, it's such a small percentage of people that win long-term at this and such a smaller percentage of people that can win long-term doing the in-game wagering and the arbitrage and all that type of stuff that I don't think that they're that concerned. You know, maybe that changes here as we go forward throughout the industry. But, you know, for right now, I don't think they're all that concerned. And I think a lot of times, you know, there just aren't enough people out there with edges in the live betting market. It is a challenge. It is a hard thing to do. Think about it. I mean, look, when do games take place? Weekends and nighttime. People are doing other things, man. You know, you got kids, you got bath time, you got the wife that wants to spend time with you and watch something on Netflix or Hulu. You know, you're trying to follow these different games while you're worrying about what's going on at work the next day or something like that. It's a hard market to beat, and a full game market is hard enough to beat. So, yes, there are opportunities. Yes, if you're watching a game, you notice foul trouble, maybe a second half play, something like that. There are chances available, but capitalizing on them is really difficult to do. So I think for a lot of people out there, it can be an attractive betting opportunity, but it can also be one that gets you in a hell of a lot of trouble. Chris via email. He sent me over a list of different questions here. I picked a couple of them out for the show. This one's kind of interesting to me. What do you think about the future of Major League Baseball? You hear about expansion, then you hear about youth programs to keep the spirit alive. It seems to be an obsession in the Caribbean. Is baseball getting more popular or less popular in the U.S.? I think it's really difficult to say. You know, I mean, I think that the lockout, or the strike, I should say, that's likely coming in 2021 is going to hurt the game in a big way. You know, the players are very disenfranchised with what's going on. Minor league pay is a big issue. You know, the contract circumvention of keeping guys down in the minors until the Super 2 deadline passes, all this type of stuff. It's going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight between the players' union and the owners and the league and everybody involved here going into 2021. And that could really hurt attendance. You know, attention spans are shorter than they've ever been. People are cutting the cord with cable, so they're not watching as much baseball. Major League Baseball doesn't promote its stars in the right way. Games are blacked out in areas where they shouldn't be. You know, baseball has a marketing problem. So in that respect, I don't know if I can say that it's more popular than it used to be, because baseball just doesn't market itself well. It doesn't market the young talent that's out there. But that being said, you've got kids getting to the big leagues now very, very quickly. They're playing 4 or 5 years with their respective teams. That's if they don't sign extensions. So kids can develop more of a rapport with the talent that's playing for the hometown team. So that certainly helps. But I think the strike that's coming up here that I certainly expect to happen, got to see how financials are structured. We got to see what changes are made, what rule changes are made, things of that sort. You know, the media is very pro-player and very anti-owner. So how do those dynamics play out here? You know, the owners being greedy, people are going to say, well, I'm not going to go and support the owner. I'm not going to go to the games. I'm not going to go and buy concessions. I'm not going to buy merchandise. I don't know. I'm not really sure how all of this is going to play out. I would say, though, gun to my head, is it more popular or less popular? I would say it's less popular overall, because the age of the average baseball fan is definitely up there in years. Older generations kind of dying off. Again, people cutting the cord with cable. Attendance is down across just about all sports. But I think it's getting more popular with the younger generation. So it's probably going to be cyclical, where maybe there is a down period where people with disposable income, like kind of what we're seeing now, just aren't going to games, just aren't spending their money on professional sports and baseball in particular. But I think we get to a point where the young people kind of keep the cycle going. So I don't know. I think it's tough to say, but again, we'll see what kind of damage the strike that I'm expecting here in 2021 does do to the game. Second question here from Chris. I don't know if I'll ever have time for building real databases like you have. Let me say this. I don't have databases. I'm not a modeler. I just have my spreadsheet for tracking purposes. And I do have that spreadsheet for the season win totals with my power ratings, games of the year lines, all that type of stuff. So I do have that, but a friend of mine built that for me. I can't do it. I suck with Excel. But in any event, Chris says here, I have been building rudimentary Excel spreadsheets that I manually fill out to follow trends in MLB. It takes a lot of time. Any advice on software that can data grab or better programs to build spreadsheets? A lot of people out there do it. If you find someone that wants to be helpful, that's great. And my friend Josh Sparnhorst doing it for me. So, Josh, I greatly appreciate that. But go to a career center. Take an Excel course or even a course in programming, something like that. They're relatively cheap to do. They're going to look good on a resume if you do wind up having to go to a new job or something like that. Or you can find something to do from home online. But, you know, this is like anything else. When you talk about sports betting, if you're just investing time, listening to podcasts like mine or like Greg Peterson's, which I was on last week, or things like VSiN or any of the other podcasts that our competing sites out in the industry have, you're investing time. Maybe you invest some money and take an Excel course. You know, if you want to get good at something, if you want to get good at anything, you have to put time and money into it. It's just that simple. Whether it's classes to learn how to do it or ways to get yourself set up. You know, I talked a couple of weeks ago about how important being organized is. When you talk about Major League Baseball, handicapping, and really handicapping in all sports, you have to invest time and money. So take an Excel course at a career center or a community college or something like that. Take a programming course. A lot of times they'll have programs for, you know, adults that want to further their educations, so you can get some discounted rates for those courses and things of that sort. So do that, you know, make some time to do that. And then who knows what you'll be able to do with it. And again, like I said, it's probably something that further down the line, as everything is done with automation, that'll help you, you know. So go to a career center, take an Excel course. That's something that I should probably do, quite frankly, whenever I can find the time to do it. Just because, you know, anything you can do to make your job easier, to be more efficient in any line of work, is going to be beneficial for you. So that would be my recommendation. You know, go to a career center and find a course, or find a friend, or, you know, find some sort of online course that you can take for Excel or programming or something like that. And you know what? If you're somebody younger who listens to the show, maybe you're in high school or college, you've got interest in baseball or betting or whatever, man, I wish when I was in high school that they taught coding. I mean, there are so many opportunities for you out there. Not to say I'm unhappy with where I am, but simply to say that, you know, if you have these different skill sets, they're very attractive to potential employers. If you can find the time to do stuff like that, it will probably help you down the line. Even if it only helps you from a betting standpoint, that's something, but it could also help you in various other lines of work as well. Once again, at Skating Tripods on Twitter, or adam@bangthebook.com via email to send Monday mailbag questions, and also adam@bangthebook.com via email if you want to sign up for the notes for the show. All right, let's go beyond the box score here. And the Reds and Braves split their four-game series. Trevor Bauer did struggle in his Reds debut, as I suggested here, as I suggested on Greg's podcast last week. Still going to look to fade him here over his next few starts with the Reds. Dallas Keuchel was very good for six innings, fell apart a little bit in the seventh. The Braves did win that game in extra innings for us, cashed that ticket. But Keuchel, good once again, just not as good as he could have been. Maybe he's a first five type of guy from a betting standpoint here. The Braves just 4-for-26 with runners in scoring position in the last two games. The Reds 5-for-13. So the Braves very easily could have won this series. They do split, but they had a lot of chances here over the course of this one. Did win a rain-shortened game in the opener here. But, you know, again, one of the things that has made baseball handicapping so difficult is that a lot of times it's just whether you get those hits with runners in scoring position or you don't. You know, a lot of these games very tightly contested, except for that. You know, the frequency of having opportunities to score runs and the frequency of cashing in said opportunities. So maybe that's a change I need to make for next year. Looking at the teams that do really generate the most opportunities with runners in scoring position and just hoping that they're able to cash those in at a good rate. The Braves bullpen, you know, got some new blood, got some new guys in there, but Shane Green really struggling here at the outset. I presume he'll settle in a little bit, but also this is a guy that was a big regression candidate leaving the Detroit Tigers. So I don't know what the Braves thought they were getting, but I presume it was something different than what they've gotten here so far. The Chicago Cubs swept the Milwaukee Brewers, and look, the Brewers are in a bad way right now. You know, they've got the injuries in the starting rotation. The offense is in the tank. I'll talk about that more here in a little bit. You know, I give Craig Counsell credit for keeping a veteran like Lorenzo Cain at the top of the order. You can't have a guy with a .310 on base percentage at the top of your order. You cannot allow that guy to hit in front of Christian Yelich and Keston Hira. You just can't do it. They have to do something different with the top of that order. I'm not entirely sure what that is. I'd probably bat Hira leadoff, to be totally honest with you. But, you know, you can't squander so many Christian Yelich plate appearances. The pitcher bats ninth, and then you got a .310 on base guy batting leadoff. I'm surprised that a team as smart as the Brewers continues to allow this to happen. Now, they do have Christian Hira batting third, or Keston Hira, excuse me, batting third now, but they got to get Kane out of that open or out of that spot there at the top of the lineup. You've got to protect Christian Yelich a little more and give him opportunities to drive in runs. And you don't do that with the pitcher hitting ninth and a .310 guy batting leadoff. Kind of doing it to themselves. You know, when you have an offense that's struggling, you have an offense struggling to make a lot of hard contact like the Brewers are, you've got to set yourself up in a position to succeed as much as you possibly can. Lorenzo Cain batting leadoff is not that right now. And the bullpen questions. Freddy Peralta, Jeremy Jeffress, Junior Guerra, all giving up runs here in this series. Now, good to get Josh Hader some rest. He didn't pitch in any of these three games. But the middle relief guys have been a big problem for the Brewers here of late. Jeffress is almost unusable. Peralta's a guy trying to find his sea legs in a bullpen capacity like that. The Brewers have issues, man. And look, you know, the Cubs got good starts from Cole Hamels, Yu Darvish, and Jose Quintana here. They were five and fly types, but still, you know, I mean, that's really all you need these days is you get five from the starter and the bullpen shuts it down, and the Cubs bullpen pretty good here in this series, and Darvish very strong in his five innings. But, you know, that blueprint isn't working for the Brewers anymore, and I have real concerns with them as we go throughout the rest of the season here. The Cubs did pick up Nick Castellanos, 791 OPS for him in four games so far. Add some length to this Cubs lineup. Obviously, he's a butcher in the outfield, but pretty good hitter. And the Cubs now with a lot of bullpen options. Joe Maddon matching up a lot here in this series. Once again, I think the Cubs are that team capable of hitting a second gear here in this division, and I don't think anybody else is. So we'll see what happens as we go forward here. But real tough series for the Brewers. Been a tough week for the Brewers, and I don't know if things get all that better anytime soon. The Yankees sweep the Red Sox in four, the division lead up to eight. I believe it's 12.5 over 12.5 or 14.5 over Boston now. The Red Sox are about done. And when you look at this series, Chris Sale rocked again. David Price rocked again. Eduardo Rodriguez walked six. He minimized the damage. Credit to him for that. But, man, this Boston rotation is a mess right now. I think they should shut David Price down for the season. I really do. They're not a playoff caliber team. If they get there to the wild card game and get Sale out there, maybe they've got a shot. But this team's just too inconsistent, just not good enough this year. You know, and we see this. When you play deep into October and even on into November sometimes, it's tough. A lot of innings mount on those guys. Sale was hurt last year. Price had some issues last year. I would definitely shut him down at a minimum, and I would consider maybe shelving Chris Sale here too if things don't get better over the next 2 or 3 weeks. You know, and also too, look, this isn't all on the pitching staff. Boston with 19 at-bats with a runner in scoring position in four games at Yankee Stadium against the Yankees pitching staff that was obliterated the previous week. So not a good look for the offense, a bad look for the starting staff. The Yankees with 39 at-bats with a runner in scoring position of their own. James Paxton wasn't great. Jay Happ wasn't great. But the offense was pretty great here, as it has been for New York most of the season. I'll talk a little bit more about the Yankees here later on in the show. The Diamondbacks took 2 out of 3 from the Nationals. And even in the game that the Diamondbacks lost, Alex Young was really good. 6 innings, 3 hits, couple runs, 3 walks, struck out 9. Kitchen sink kind of arsenal. Not a hard-throwing guy, but he throws a lot of different pitches. Against the top 5 lineup against lefties in Washington. So a good effort there from Alex Young. Arizona rocks Strasburg, knocked Corbin around. I think Arizona overs are worth a look here the rest of the way. The offense didn't lose many pieces. The pitching staff has. The bullpen's still kind of questionable. So Arizona overs, something I would look at here. Of course, I've done awful on totals here so far this season, but I would be looking for some of those spots to play those Arizona overs. The Indians with a sweep of the Angels. Look, this is what the Indians are going to do. This is going to be their MO. They're going to beat up on bad teams, and they're probably going to lose close games or lose series to the good teams, at least until that starting rotation kind of stabilizes a little bit once they get Corey Kluber back. Maybe Aaron Civale, who goes tonight, can be a guy for them. But look, you know, 20-7, the runs in this series, 7-2, the Indians win in home runs. They've created a high slugging percentage lineup like the Minnesota Twins. Jose Ramirez has gotten going. Kipnis is going. Deep lineup 1 through 9. We'll see how August goes. The schedule does ramp up a little bit here for the Tribe, but they will keep doing this. They will keep beating bad teams. It's what they've done the last 4 years within this division, and they'll do it again here this year. They get the Rangers this week and the Twins next weekend. So we'll see how that weekend set goes for them, but I would expect them to do very well against the Rangers here this week. Haven't done an exit velocity update in a while, so let's do that. And what I'm going to look at here, 95 mile per hour plus batted balls since June 1st. So we're looking at the summer here when teams have really put on a big power display. The league average since June 1st on batted balls of 95 plus miles per hour, 549. Your top five, Yankees at 618, the Braves 586, Astros 581, Indians 577, Rockies 575. The Astros struggled with this early in the year. The Indians struggled with this early in the year. They've gotten much better. Braves and Yankees have been top five caliber all year long. And the Rockies really getting it going at Coors Field here over the last couple of months. Teams 6 through 10, Mariners, Rangers, Marlins, interestingly enough, Red Sox, and Blue Jays. Again, top five in batting average on 95-plus mile-per-hour batted balls. The bottom five, the Milwaukee Brewers at 507. So this has been a two-month prolonged slump for that offense, not making a lot of hard contact. That's a problem for them. The Diamondbacks at 512. If you remember, the Diamondbacks over the first 2 months of the season, one of the best teams in baseball on high-velocity contact. Now, one of the worst. So that's how things kind of progress a little bit here in this business. A's at 518, Royals 519, Padres 532. The rest of the bottom 10, the Tigers, no surprise. The Minnesota Twins, interestingly enough, Nationals, Mets, and Giants. Now, the league average WOBA, weighted on base average, on 95-plus mile-per-hour batted balls since June 1st, since and inclusive of June 1st. Yankees, 783. Braves, 752. Mariners, 741. They're a high fly ball lineup, that's why. Astros and Indians at 740. Rest of the top five here, the Blue Jays, the Twins, Dodgers, Red Sox, and Rangers. So the Twins, seventh lowest batting average, seventh highest WOBA. So they maximize their high velocity contact when they do make it, hit for a ton of power, lots and lots of home runs for them. That's why they have the high WOBA, but they probably also have a lower batting average from hitting a lot of fly balls and things of that sort. The bottom five here in WOBA, the Royals 619, Brewers 645. Once again, the Brewers, not a lot of hard contact, not a lot of power from that lineup here of late. Tigers, White Sox, Diamondbacks 651. Rest of the bottom 10 here, the Giants, Rays, Pirates, Mets, and Orioles. Now, the most 95-plus mile-per-hour batted balls since June 1st, Red Sox with 639, Rays 609, Twins 594, Brewers 577, Braves 576. So that's what's interesting, and I guess I misspoke there a second ago. The Brewers have made a lot of hard contact. They're fourth in number of 95-plus batted balls, just don't have the outcomes. So maybe this is a lineup in line for positive aggression. Maybe this is a lineup that will kind of get it going a little bit here offensively as they have some better fortunes on that high-velocity contact. But part of the problem here for the Brewers, they hit a lot of ground balls. And on ground balls, you don't produce WOBA. You don't produce extra base hits. So the Brewers here maybe not having the most optimal launch angle on those high-velocity batted balls. So that is a big reason why they've had so many offensive struggles. Finally, the Braves, 576. Rest of the top five here, Mets, Dodgers, Yankees, Blue Jays, and Giants. So the Blue Jays and Giants making a lot of high-velocity contact here since the start of June. The bottom five, the St. Louis Cardinals at 445. I've talked a lot about how bad their offense has been the last 2 months. This is why. They're not making high-velocity contact at a high enough rate. You don't score runs when you don't hit the ball hard, especially in today's day and age. So that's something that has plagued the Cardinals here over the last couple of months. Mariners, 446. Tigers, 448. Reds, 452. And White Sox, 454. Rest of the bottom here, Marlins, Royals, Orioles, Phillies, and Diamondbacks with the fewest number of 95-plus batted balls. So with that in mind, are there any positive or negative regression candidates? The Brewers could be one, but again, they hit so many ground balls that it's such a challenge for them offensively to really get those damaging hits like the doubles and the home runs. I think the Diamondbacks could be a little bit better as well here. You know, they're not making a ton of high-velocity contact. They are bottom 10 in number of 95 plus batted balls, but I would expect them to get better in the batting average department at 512. They've got some guys that can run a little bit. I think a Diamondbacks offense should be in line for some positive regression here, and sort of leading to what I mentioned earlier about playing some overs with them. The Blue Jays offense has definitely gotten better. I think that's a sustainable trend. Not really a negative regression candidate, but I think that's sustainable with their young guys starting to make some more hard contact there. I also think that, you know, the Giants are probably in line to regress a little bit here. And they're already towards the bottom, but I'm just not a big fan of that offensive team, of that personnel. I still think that they're a regression candidate. The Rays, another one, low on the wOBA side because they hit so many ground balls. I don't know if that changes at all. Maybe that changes a little bit with some of the new acquisitions that they've made. So maybe they're a little bit of a positive regression candidate here, especially when you consider that they're second in number of 95-plus batted balls since the start of June. One other thing I want to mention here today, pitcher ground ball batting averages. Minimum of 150 ground balls against. The highest batting averages against. Adrian Sampson of Texas, 314. Mike Minor, 313. Both Rangers. Why is that? Well, that sun-baked infield in Texas speeds up ground balls. They're almost like super balls, like those bouncy balls you get out of the little vending machines. Balls really go fast down there on the ground. I don't think that this changes. It could change once we get to September if it cools down a little bit. We've seen a lot of really warm Septembers here of late. So I think Sampson and Mike Minor both continue to struggle on ground balls. You've got, I guess Gio Gonzalez at 296. You've got Aaron Sanchez at 275. You've got Max Fried at 269. The other top 10 here, Noah Syndergaard, Steven Matz, I believe that's Sonny Gray, Marcus Stroman, and Zach Eflin. So those are the highest batting averages on ground balls. The lowest, Merrill Kelly, 178. Brett Anderson, 182. Zach Greinke, 184. Will this go up? It could. The Astros are a solid defensive team. I don't think they're as good on the infield as Arizona is, but Greinke probably going to see a strikeout increase to balance that out. Aaron Nola, 189. Hyunjin Ryu, 189. Others that are doing very well on ground balls, Kyle Gibson, Yanni Chirinos, Wade Miley, Joe Musgrove, Luis Castillo, Dakota Hudson, Miles Mikolas. So, you know, some of these guys doing very well, some of these guys not doing so well on ground balls. But one guy that did stand out to me here is Trevor Bauer at 211, one of the better ground ball batting averages against in baseball. The Reds aren't a bad defensive infield, but they're not the Indians, I don't think. So that could be a little bit of a problem. Increased hard contact, more ground balls finding holes, seeing a lot of reasons to be against Trevor Bauer here in his Reds tenure until he gets settled in with everything. All right, so let's go down the lines, roll through some line moves here over the weekend. Not a ton of these here, actually, but on Friday we saw Jose Quintana money with a fade of Zach Davies. The regression monster has found Zach Davies. He's struggled of late. The market has been fading him a lot, and they're finally getting rewarded for it. Very heavy Kevin Gausman money on Friday. That was Reds and Braves in that one. Alex Wood going for the Reds. Wood coming off the IL, second start, pitched much better than Gausman did as Cincinnati took care of business in that one. A lot of pitching changes throwing off numbers on Friday, and really that's probably going to be a theme here over the rest of the year as pitchers get scratched, they get moved back, teams use openers, bulk guys, call-ups, all kinds of shit. It's just going to throw the market completely out of whack here with a lot of these pitching changes. We did see some James Paxton money against Eduardo Rodriguez and the Red Sox. That one kind of bounced around a little bit early. Eventually, Paxton took money off of the opening number. Heavy Wade Miley money on Friday as well against Yusei Kikuchi and the Mariners. Kikuchi has been awful against the AL West. He's got an ERA under 4 against everybody else and a big strikeout percentage increase. So Kikuchi against non-AL West teams, maybe not a bad bet here as we go forward. Saturday, a quiet day for moves. Big favorites like the Twins, Rays, and Phillies became bigger favorites. We saw some money on the A's with Mike Fiers against Dakota Hudson. That was a winner, but a pretty quiet day on Saturday overall. Did see some money on Sunday, though, here. Saw a fade of Noah Syndergaard. That was with Joe Musgrove on the mound for the Pirates. Musgrove with that low left on base percentage. The problem is he just doesn't get any better. So we'll see if money keeps coming in on him. I'm certainly going to shy away from him. Brewers took money against Yu Darvish. That was Adrian Hauser in that one. A little bit surprised that there wasn't some buyback on the Cubs with the day off for Keston Hira, but the Brewers were a loser in that one. Kyle Freeland actually took money as a favorite at home at Coors Field against Tyler Beede and the Giants. I could never lay a Kyle Freeland price at home against any team with a pulse, but he was pretty good there in that start against San Francisco. We saw some money on Patrick Corbin. That was a loser. Shane Bieber got bet into a bigger favorite. That was a winner. Justin Verlander closed as high as minus 473 against Seattle yesterday. Heritage dealing a dollar line. Plus 373, minus 473 is a joke. Have something competitive for the love of God. But in any event, Verlander was a winner there in that one. Then we saw David Price money on Sunday Night Baseball against the Yankees. That was a loser. And like I said, I would sit Price down. I would shut him down for the rest of the year. There's no equity, no value in sitting him out there. You still owe him a ton of money. I'd shut it down. We'll see if the Red Sox do decide to do that. Monday, we're seeing Jordan Lyles money in a fade of Dario Agrizal. Agrizal, a big ERA to FIP, ERA to xFIP discrepancy guy. Lyles taking money makes sense, but man, laying 40 cents against anybody with the Brewers right now is a real challenge. Seeing money on Spencer Turnbull and the Tigers against the White Sox and Lucas Giolito. Seen a lot of fades of Giolito this year for a guy that really outside of pitching against premier offenses has been really good, and the Tigers the farthest thing for a premier offense. So a little bit surprised by that move, especially with Turnbull just now coming off of the IL. Heavy Rick Porcello money against Mike Montgomery and the Royals. We're seeing some Kyle Hendricks money bouncing around out there in the market against the A's. Very right-handed heavy Oakland lineup. Hendricks dominates righties. That one makes some sense there to me. And the Braves and Twins game bouncing around a little bit. Best series here that we've got early in the week. And, you know, we saw Soroka, pretty decent road favorite. Then we saw Odorizzi money. Now the market's kind of settled in a little bit, but that should be a real interesting series there. Those two teams I'll talk about here in a couple of minutes. I like the Indians run line tonight. I like Aaron Civale going up against the Rangers. I don't think much of the Rangers offense. I don't think much of Mike Minor either, going up against a very right-handed heavy Cleveland lineup. But my favorite play of the night, look, this will lose more often than it wins. I assure you of that. I promise you of that. It could lose 14-1. It wouldn't surprise me at all. But I've got to play Baltimore tonight. I just have to. Yankees off of that four-game sweep with 4 games in 3 days against Boston. Rain delay last night pushed the game back an hour. They got to Baltimore very, very early in the morning. Look, the Yankees are up 8. Yeah, maybe they want home field over Houston. But they've played a lot of good teams here of late, and they've handled themselves pretty well. This week, Baltimore, Toronto, Baltimore again. This is basically a bye week for the Yankees. But you play 8 games against Boston in the last week and a half. You play Minnesota. You play some good teams. Now you play Baltimore. And look, the Orioles suck. We all know that. The Orioles suck. They're terrible. But this spot tonight is really bad for New York. If they win, so be it. They're the better team. They're supposed to. But I have to take the shot on Baltimore here tonight. Again, playing Boston so much. The big statement series at home. Polish off the sweep. Blow up Sale and Price in the 2 games that they started. You got to go with Baltimore tonight, I think. And maybe, you know, Masahiro Tanaka pitches well. Maybe he figures it out. But I'm on Baltimore. I have to. The spot is just, it's too good to pass on the return that's out there for Baltimore. And also, too, Baltimore, I mean, look, they've played the Yankees tough the last few years. They're nowhere near the Yankees level, but they hang in there. You know, they get up for these series. I'd expect them to be up for this one. I don't know about New York. Again, maybe talent just wins out, but give me Baltimore tonight. I just have to. A's and Cubs here as we preview the week ahead. Chris Bassett, Kyle Hendricks tonight, Brett Anderson, John Lester tomorrow, Homer Bailey, Jose Quintana on Wednesday. This is a tough spot for the A's. You know, these are maybe not the guys you'd want to send out against the Cubs, although I don't know who the A's would want to send out against the Cubs. But in order to use Chris Davis's bat, he has to play in the outfield. He is terrible in the outfield. So they're drawing a couple of lefties. They definitely want to have him out there. Maybe he doesn't play tonight, but he'll play Tuesday and Wednesday. And he's not good out there. just baby giraffing his way around the outfield. So could be a higher scoring series here, not just because of that, but because you've got the A's and their right-handed heavy lineup against a couple of lefties in Lester and Quintana. I think the Cubs can have success here against all three of these pitchers for Oakland. So it could be a higher scoring series at Wrigley. We'll see if I wind up with any side plays on it. For right now, I don't think so, but we'll see what happens here with the prices that get posted. Braves and Twins. Mike Soroka, Jake Odorizzi tonight, Max Fried, Jose Barrios tomorrow, Kevin Gausman, Martin Perez on Wednesday. Twins with the most barreled balls in the league. The Braves with the second most barreled balls in the league. The pitching matchups seem to favor the Twins here, though, in this series, I would think. The new-look Braves pen should get a workout. The Braves are plenty equipped to add a hitter for interleague. Maybe this series looks like the Twins and Yankees. It's certainly possible. These two teams make tons of hard contact. Target Field plays a little bit towards the batters in the summer months, so maybe we get some runs here in this series. I'm not sure I'll have any side plays in this one, but it's definitely an interesting series, to say the least. Brewers and Pirates. Jordan Lyles, Dario Agurisol tonight. Chase Anderson, Stephen Brault tomorrow. Zach Davies, Trevor Williams on Wednesday. Look, the Brewers got to figure this out. Otherwise, they're going to get buried in the Central Division. You've got to beat a team like Pittsburgh that has just not been winning games in the second half. The pressure is on Milwaukee here in this series. And maybe that doesn't help them a whole lot. But they're going to be a road favorite in all three games, I think. They have to win these games. I don't know if they will, but there's going to be that pressure and that incentive for them to do it. So we'll see if that creates any value to go against them or to go on them as their backs are up against the wall a little bit. But look, this is not a great week for games and series. Maybe the Yankees are a little bit fatigued after the Red Sox series and the doubleheader. Maybe Baltimore underdog money line is the way to go in that series. I do think there's one spot here on Wednesday. The Indians are in a flat spot Wednesday. It'll be Lance Lynn against Mike Clevenger. It's a day game. The Indians play the Twins starting Thursday. That's the series they have circled. So I think Wednesday is a getaway day under game. Again, I suck at totals, but I think that this is one where you want to look at the under here, Lynn versus Clevenger. I don't know what the price will look like on the side, but I do think the under on Wednesday, the way to look there in that one. We got some Bang the Book radio content coming your way here this week. I'll do some kind of football thing either Tuesday or Wednesday. Bettors Box Thursday, UFC coming up on Friday. Keep an eye out for that Danny Borgs piece over at bangthebook.com. Lockie Lockerson sent me a piece while I was recording here. So good stuff coming your way this afternoon over at the website. And always good stuff here on Bang the Book Radio. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box.